No, 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 get away from me. Get away from me. Get the fuck away from me. I don't want to fucking bite you. I have very little HP, and I don't want to waste it biting you. God, avoiding these fucking wizard thingies is like avoiding fucking Pokemon trainers. The second they look at you, it's like, you're done. You're screwed. You're gonna have to waste valuable fucking time and effort fighting me when all I want to do is go defeat the fucking boss so I can defeat the fucking level, motherfucking. Oh, hey, babe. Not cursing at my phone and calling it a motherfucker. Okay, so yesterday, a Kingdom Hearts RPG app came out, and I may or may not have not been doing anything else. Yeah, I know that was a double negative, I just confused myself. Anyway, I am reliving my childhood in the best possible way, and I would appreciate it if you just let me sit here and stay up the entire night. But baby, look, the avatar looks like me. I have a Keyblade. This is the greatest moment of my life. Yes, I'm aware that it's like, oh, it's midnight. When did that happen? What? Oh, I thought it was like 11. Okay, I might not know what time it is. But baby. Okay, yes, Pride and Prejudice. But babe, hear me out. Kingdom Hearts. Pride and Prejudice, but Kingdom Hearts. Okay, I'm good. Okay, not too often, but I think I'm gonna have to. Please, let me stay up. Come on, you can't resist the puppy eyes. I know you can't, you never can. Oh, suck! I hate you. I don't hate you, you know I don't, but I want to stay up and defeat this copter. This is the fourth time I've gone up against him, and I want, don't take my phone. You're a poop, and I hate you. No, I don't want to read you, Pride and Prejudice, because you're a poop. Oh. No, don't. Ugh. You've been learning the ways of the puppy eyes from me, I see. You spend too much time around me. Fine, I'll read it. But you're still a poop. Within a short walk of Longbourn lived a family with whom the Bennets were particularly intimate. Sir William Lucas had been formerly in trade in Meryton, where he had made a tolerable fortune and risen to the honor of knighthood by an address to the king during his mayoralty. The distinction had been perhaps felt too strongly, had given him a digest to his business and to his residence in the small market town, and quitting them both, he had removed from his family to a house about a mile from Meryton, dominated from that period Lucas Lodge, where he could think with pleasure of his own importance and unshackled by business occupy himself solely in being civil to all the world. For though elated by his rank, it did not render him supercilious. On the contrary, he was all attention to everybody. By nature inoffensive, friendly, and obliging, his presentation at St. James had made him courteous. Lady Lucas was a very kind of good woman, not too clever to be a valuable neighbor to Mrs. Bennet. They had several children, the eldest of them, a sensible, intelligent young woman, about 27, was Elizabeth's intimate friend. That the Miss Lucases and the Miss Bennets should meet to talk over a ball was absolutely necessary, and the morning after the assembly brought the former to Longbourn to hear and to communicate. "You began the evening well, Charlotte," said Mrs. Bennet, with civil self-command to Miss Lucas. "You were Mr. Bingley's first choice." "Yes, but he seemed to like his second better." "Oh, you mean Jane, I suppose, because he danced with her twice." "To be sure, that did seem as if he admired her. Indeed, I rather believe he did. I heard something about it, but I hardly know what. Something about Mrs. Robinson." "Perhaps you mean what I overheard between him and Mr. Robinson. Did I not mention to you? Mr. Robinson's asking him how he liked our Meryton assemblies, and whether he did not think there were many a great pretty women in the room, and which he thought the prettiest. And his answering immediately to the last question, 'Oh, the eldest Miss Bennet, with beyond a doubt. There cannot be two opinions on that point.' Upon my word, well, that was very decided indeed. It seemed as if, but however, it may all come to nothing, you know." "My overhearings were more to the purpose than yours, Eliza," said Charlotte. "Mr. Darcy is not so well worth listening to as his friend, is he?" "Poor Eliza, to be only just tolerable." "I beg you would not put in Lizzie's head to be vexed by his ill treatment, for he is a disagreeable man. That would be quite a misfortune to be liked by him. Mrs. Long told me last night that he sat close to her for half an hour without once opening his lips." "Are you quite sure, ma'am? Is there not a little mistake?" said Jane. "I certainly saw Mr. Darcy speaking to her." "Aye, but because she asked him at last how he liked Netherfield, and he could not help answering her. But she said he seemed very angry at being spoke to." "Miss Bingley told me," said Jane, "that he never speaks much unless among his intimate acquaintance. With them, he is remarkably agreeable." "I do not believe a word of it, my dear. If he had been so very agreeable, he would have talked to Mrs. Long. But I can guess how it is. Everybody said that he is ate up with pride, and I dare say he had heard somehow that Mrs. Long does not keep a carriage, and had come to the ball in a hack chaise." "I do not mind his not talking to Mrs. Long," said Miss Lucas, "but I wish he had danced with Eliza." "Another time, Lizzie," said her mother. "I would not dance with him if I were you." "I believe, ma'am, I may safely promise you never to dance with him." "Ha, ha, ha, irony." "His pride," said Miss Lucas, "does not offend me so much as pride often does, because there is an excuse for it. One cannot wonder that so very a fine man, with family, fortune, everything in his favor, should think highly of himself. If I may so express it, he has a right to be proud." "That is very true," replied Elizabeth, "and I could easily forgive his pride if he had not mortified mine." "Pride," observed Mary, who piqued herself upon the solidarity of her affections, "is a very common failing, I believe. By all that I have ever read, I am convinced that it is very common indeed, that human nature is particularly prone to it, and that there are very few of us who do not cherish a feeling of self-complacency on the score of some quality or other, real or imaginary. Vanity and pride are different things, though the words are often used synonymously. A person may be proud without being vain. Pride relates more to our opinion of ourselves, vanity to what we would have others think of us." "If I were as rich as Mr. Darcy," cried a young Lucas who came with his sisters, "I should not care how proud I was. I'd keep a pack of foxhounds and drink a bottle of wine every day." "Then you would drink a great meal more than you ought," said Mrs. Bennet, "and if I were to see you at it, I should take your bottle away directly." Lloyd protested that she should not. She continued to declare that she would, and the argument ended only with the visit. "Could easily forgive his pride if he had not mortified mine." That basically sums up the relationship, I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, I don't like Mary either. Mary's a little long-winded, I think is the word they would use for her. Okay, chapter 6. The ladies of Longbourn soon waited on those of Netherfield. The visit was returned in new form. Miss Bennet's pleasing manners grew on the goodwill of Mrs. Hurst and Miss Bingley, and though the mother was found to be intolerable and the younger sisters not worth speaking to, a wish of being better acquainted with them was expressed toward the two eldest. By Jane, this attention was received with the greatest pleasure, but Elizabeth still saw superciliousness in their treatment of everybody, hardly excepting even her sister, and could not like them, though their kindness to Jane, such as it was, had a value, as arising in all probability from the influence of their brother's admiration. It was generally evident whenever they met that he did admire her, and to her it was equally evident that Jane was yielding to the preference which she had begun to entertain for him from the first, and was in a way to be very much in love. But she considered with pleasure that was not likely to be discovered by the world in general, since Jane united with such great strength of feeling, a composure of temper, and a uniform cheerfulness of manner, which would guard her from suspicions of the impertinent. She mentioned this to her friend, Miss Lucas. "It may perhaps be pleasant," replied Charlotte, "to be able to impose on the public in such a case, but it's sometimes a disadvantage to be so very guarded. If a woman conceals her affection with the same skill from the object of it, she may lose the opportunity of fixing him, and it will then be but poor consolation to believe the world equally in the dark. There is so much of gratitude or vanity in almost every attachment that it is not safe to leave any to itself. We can all begin freely. A slight preference is natural enough. There are very few of us who have heart enough to be really in love without encouragement. In 9 cases out of 10, a woman had better show more affection than she feels. Bingley likes your sister, undoubtedly, but he may never do more than like her if she does not help him on. But she does help him on, as much as her nature will allow. If I can perceive her regard of him, he must be a simpleton indeed not to discover it too. Remember, Eliza, that he does not know Jane's disposition as you do. But if a woman is partial to a man and does not endeavor to conceal it, he must find it out. Perhaps he must, if he sees enough of her. But though Bingley and Jane meet tolerably often, it is never for many hours together. And as they always see each other in large mixed parties, it is impossible that every moment should be employed in conversing together. Jane should therefore make the most of every half hour in which she can command his attention. When she is secure of him, there will be leisure for falling in love as much as she chooses. "Your plan is a good one," replied Elizabeth, "where nothing is in question but the desire of being well married, and if I were determined to get a rich husband or any husband, I dare say I should adopt it. These are not Jane's feelings. She's not acting by design. As yet, she cannot even be certain of the degree of her own regard, nor its reasonableness. She has known him only a fortnight. She danced 4 times with him at Meryton. She saw him 1 morning at his own house, and has since dined in his company with him 4 times. That is not quite enough to make her understand his character. Not as you represent it. Had she merely dined with him, she might have only have discovered whether he had a good appetite. But you must remember that 4 evenings have also spent together, and 4 evenings may do a great deal. Yes, these 4 evenings had enabled them to ascertain whether they both like Vin rather than commerce, but with respect to any other leading characteristic, I did not imagine that much has been unfolded. Well, said Charlotte, I wish Jane success with all my heart, and if she were married to him tomorrow, I should think she had as good a chance of happiness as if she were to be studying his character for a 12-month. Happiness in marriage is entirely a matter of chance. If the dispositions of the parties are ever so well known to each other, or ever so similar beforehand, it does not advance their felicity in the least. They always contrive to grow sufficiently, and like afterwards to have their share of vexation. It is better to know as little as possible of the defects of the person with whom you are about to pass your life. You make me laugh, Charlotte, but it is not sound. You know it is not sound, and that you would never act in this way yourself. Occupied in observing Mr. Bingley's attentions to her sister, Elizabeth was far from suspecting that she herself became an object of some interest in
eyes. I am the Master Commander!
Why you do that, phone? See, you put my phone all the way on the other side of the room. I don't feel like answering it. Oh, well, it's midnight. Whoever it is can wait. Oh gosh, where was I? And you were just starting to drift off too. Yes. Mr. Darcy had at first scarcely allowed her to be pretty. He had looked at her without admiration at the ball, and when they next met, he looked at her only to criticize. But no sooner had he made it clear to himself and his friends that she had hardly a good feature in her face, than he began to find it rendered uncommonly intelligent by the beautiful expression of her dark eyes. This discovery succeeding some others equally mortifying. Though he had detected with the critical eye more than one failure of perfect symmetry in her form, he was forced to acknowledge her figure to be light and pleasing. In spite of his asserting that her manners were not those of the fashionable world, he was caught by their easy playfulness. Of this, she was perfectly unaware. To her, he was the only man who made himself agreeable nowhere, and who had not thought her handsome enough to dance with.
Shh. I know, my ringtone's a bit obnoxious. I'll get on changing that. Close your eyes again, dude.
He began to wish to know more of her, and as he stepped towards conversing with her himself, attended to her conversation with others. His doing so drew her notice. It was at Sir William Lucas's where a large party was assembled. "What does Mr. Darcy mean," said she to Charlotte, "by listening to my conversation with Colonel Forrester?" That is a question which Mr. Darcy only can answer. "But if he does any more, I shall certainly let him know that I see what he is about. He has a very satirical eye, and if I do not begin by being impertinent myself, I shall soon grow afraid of him." On his approaching them soon afterwards, though without seeming to have any intention of speaking, Miss Lucas defied her friend to mention such a subject to him, which immediately provoking Elizabeth to do it, she turned to him and said, "Did you not think, Mr. Darcy, that I expressed myself uncommonly well just now, when I was teasing Colonel Forster to give us a ball at Meryton?" "With great energy. But it is a subject which always makes Lady energetic. You are severe on us." "It shall be her turn soon to be teased, Miss Lucas. I'm going to open the instrument, Eliza, and you know what follows." "You are a very strange creature by way of a friend, always wanting me to play and sing before anybody and everybody. If my fancy had taken a musical turn, you would have been invaluable, but as it is, I would rather not sit down before those who must be in the habit of hearing the very best performers." On Miss Lucas's persevering, however, she added, "Very well. If it must be so, it must." And gravely glancing at Mr. Darcy, "There is a fine old saying, which everybody here is, of course, familiar with. Keep your breath to cool your porridge, and I shall keep mine to swell my song." Her performance was pleasing, though by no means capital. After a song or two, and before she could reply to the entreaties of several that she would sing again, she was eagerly succeeded at the instrument by her sister Mary, who, having in consequence by being the only plain one in the family, worked hard for knowledge and accomplishments, was always impatient for display. Mary had neither genius nor taste, and though vanity had given her application, had given her likewise a pedantic air and conceited manner, which would have injured a higher degree of excellence than she had reached. Elizabeth, easy and affected, had been listened to with much more pleasure, though not playing half so well, and Mary, at the end of a long concerto, was glad to purchase praise and gratitude by Scotch and Irish airs at the request of her sisters, who, with some of the Lucases and 2 or 3 other officers, joined eagerly in the dancing at one end of the room. Mr. Darcy stood near them in silent indignation at such a mode of passing the evening, to the exclusion of all conversation, and was much too engrossed by his own thoughts to perceive that Sir William Lucas was his neighbor to whilst Sir William thus began. "What a charming amusement for young people this is, Mr. Darcy. There is nothing like dancing, after all. I consider it one of the finest refinements of polished besides blah 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 polished societies." "Certainly, sir, and has the advantage of also being in vogue amongst the less polished societies of the world. Every savage can dance." Sir William only smiled. "Your friend performs delightfully," he continued after a pause, on seeing Bingley join the group. "And I doubt not that you are an adept in the science yourself, Mr. Darcy."
"You saw me dance at Meryton, I believe, sir."
"Yes, indeed, and received no considerable delight from the sight. You often dance at St. James?"
"Never, sir."
"Do you not think it would be a proper compliment to the place?"
"It is a compliment which I would never pay to any place if I could avoid it.
"You have a house in town, I conclude." Mr. Darcy bowed. "I had once some thoughts of fixing in town myself, for I am fond of superior society, but I did not feel quite certain that the air of London would agree with Lady Lucas.
He paused in hopes of an answer, but his companion was not disposed to make any, and Elizabeth at that instant moving towards them, he was struck with the notion of doing a very gallant thing, and called out to her. "My dear Miss Eliza, why are you not dancing? Mr. Darcy, you must allow me to present this young lady to you as a very desirable partner. You cannot refuse to dance, I am sure, when so much beauty is before you." "It's quite the charmer, isn't he?" And taking her hand, he would give it to Mr. Darcy, who, though extremely surprised, was not unwilling to receive it, when she instantly drew back and said with some discomposure to Sir William, "Indeed, sir, I have not the least intention of dancing. I entreat you not to suppose I have moved this way in order to beg for a partner." Mr. Darcy, with grave propriety, requested to be allowed the honor of her hand, but in vain. Elizabeth was determined, nor did Sir William at all shake her purpose by his attempt at persuasion. "That's cold. That is stone cold." "You excel so much in dance, Miss Eliza, that it is cruel to deny me the happiness of seeing you. And though this gentleman dislikes the amusement in general, he can have no objection, I am sure, to oblige us for 1/2 hour. "Mr. Darcy is all politeness," said Elizabeth, smiling. "He is indeed. But considering the inducement, my dear Eliza, we cannot wonder at his compliance, for who would object to such a partner?" Elizabeth looked archly and turned away. Her resistance had not injured her with the gentleman, and he was thinking of her with some complacency when thus accosted by Miss Bingley. "I can guess the subject of your reverie." "I should imagine not." "You are considering how insupportable it would be to pass many evenings in this manner, in such society. Indeed, I am quite of your opinion. I was never more annoyed. The insipidity, and yet the noise, the nothingness, and yet the self-importance of all these people. What would I give to hear your strictures on them?" "Your conjecture is totally wrong, I assure you. My mind was more agreeably engaged. I have been meditating on the very great pleasure that a pair of fine eyes in the face of a pretty woman can bestow." Miss Bingley immediately fixed her eyes on his face, and desired he would tell her what lady had the credit of inspiring such reflections. Mr. Darcy replied with great intrepidity, "Miss Elizabeth Bennet." "Miss Elizabeth Bennet," replied Miss Bingley, "I am all astonishment. How long has she been such a favorite? And pray, when am I to wish you joy?" When am I to wish you joy? That's the inflection on the sentence. "That is exactly the question which I expect you to ask. Lady's imagination is very rapid. Jumps from admiration to love, from love to matrimony in a moment. I knew you would be wishing me joy." "Nay, if you were so serious about it, I should consider the matter as absolutely settled. You have a charming mother-in-law indeed, and of course she'll always be at Pemberley with you." He listened to her with perfect indifference, which she chose to entertain herself in this manner. And as this composure convinced her that all was safe, her wit flowed long. "Fucking Caroline Bingley. Bitch. I think that's enough for tonight. Two chapters a time. That's a good pace, don't you think?" And you're asleep. I could watch you sleep for forever. Wow, that sounded really creepy. Okay. You're not in a Victorian novel. You cannot say stuff like that. Night, babe. Love you.